Welcome to Talking to America. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. Our guest is Len Savage, prolific firearms designer, president of Historic Arms, an expert witness for firearms issues, and to many Americans, a hero who pursues justice for all gun owners. Our subject today is the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. This interview is an update based on the numerous articles about Len's experience with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms that are posted on the JPFO.org site. We'll be talking about the arrogance and treachery of the U.S. Department of Justice. Len, welcome to Talking to America. Would you please tell our listeners about your background and Historic Arms?
All right. Well, I designed and built my first gun in the eighth grade in shop class, and have worked as a journeyman machine builder for the better part of my life. And as you know, and most folks should know, that a firearm is just a smaller version of a machine, bigger than a pocket watch and smaller than a car. The principles are the same. My company specializes in research development. We design reproductions of historic firearms. We make sure that they comply with all the U.S. government laws, and we've tried very hard to work with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. My company also specializes in research and development to sort of double-check for other people in the industry. We've become so familiar with the federal laws and involving firearms that we kind of give them a pre-check, and sometimes we'll submit their device or firearm for them, mainly because of their fear of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
You know, you've had some problems with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, or actually they've caused you problems. So I guess the question is, when did they start to lean on you and why?
Well, the answer to that is not real simplistic. It began when I started asking questions. You know, what's your procedure? What's the criteria? If I'm going to build this, how can I make sure that it meets your criteria? They didn't like that. They leaned on me when I asked questions. I shared some information with you and your organization, and they got posted on the Internet. And they really seemed to take offense to that, offense to the point where the Director of Enforcement Programs and Services of the BATF actually told me I was threatening them by posting my opinions on your website. They really got hostile when I was asked to basically be a technical advisor in the Glover case. And we showed up for that test, and we made a point of videotaping it, as you well know. And that seemed to really set them off, that the truth was starting to creep out there.
The Glover tape that we offer, BATF fails the test, shows you in action. Maybe you could tell people a little bit about the Glover case and what your findings were.
The government asserted that Mr. John Glover of North Carolina possessed an illegal machine gun. He was an avid enthusiast and quite the expert marksman. He has many trophies. The guy's a crack shot. John worked as a gunsmith and helped out people from time to time when they had problems with their match guns. What basically happened is the government came in, seized all of his firearms, and tested them. And they asserted that one of his firearms was a machine gun, because with a specific ammunition, they were able to get it to slam fire or double tap. And they indicted him. And I was asked to come take a look at the firearm and to view the test firing from the expert that the ATF was sending down for this. We found out real quick on the range that it wasn't doing it all the time. As a matter of fact, out of 12 tests, it would only do it twice, and only with one particular brand of ammunition, and not every time with that brand of ammunition. When he was ejecting his empties, and I saw that there was dents in the primer, which causes the cartridge to ignite, I realized right then and there that a very dangerous situation was going on. And when we disassembled it, we found out that there was a broken and worn part inside the gun. that allowed this to happen, that this was a malfunction. And as a matter of fact, it's a malfunction that occurs regularly with semi-automatic firearms, and it needs to be looked at and repaired by a gunsmith. Some of the more amazing things that this gentleman, who claimed to be an expert, said he was from Firearms Technology Branch. We found out that he worked in imports, and I thought he was truly incompetent at the time. And he admitted that he didn't even disassemble the rifle to find out why it was doing what it was doing. But since it had more than one shot go off with the pull of a trigger, it was a machine gun. Well, under that definition, a malfunctioning double-barreled shotgun would be a machine gun. Anyway, everybody needs to get the tape and see this for themselves. The DVD, which I prefer, can take you right to the spots that are just amazing. You just wouldn't think that the U.S. government prosecuted people this way. It's interesting to say the least, and if you own a firearm, get the DVD.
Especially if you own a semi-automatic firearm. And especially if you want to see some information you were never meant to see.
Oh, exactly. They told me that they had charges pending against me when that DVD was made available through JPFO. It hasn't happened, and it's we didn't violate any law, but it goes right in line with their tendency to threaten people.
Can you elaborate a little on the charges that they were telling you they were going to press against you?
Well, they wouldn't tell me. They just told me that they had charges pending against me. This was Mr. Sterling Nixon. He's the branch chief of Firearms Technology Branch. I refer to him as FTB for short. FTB is the Federal Law Enforcement Agency's laboratory that is responsible for testing every criminal case in every criminal court that involves firearm technology issues. Should people say it's a machine gun or it's been sawed off or it's been modified in some way. These are supposed to be the best of the best of our federal law enforcement.
That's interesting. I'm glad you brought up the DVD because this has been very useful to many attorneys who have clients who are being harassed by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. In fact, not just harassed, it's putting a mildly. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is trying to destroy people's lives, especially if they're gun owners. And it seems to be going on with the blessing of the Republican Party. You want to mention about Jim Sensenbrenner?
By all means. And in what he's doing, there's a very simple solution to this problem with FTB. And it was introduced by Congressman Gingrey. It was called H.R. 1603, the Fairness in Firearms Testing Act. And basically, it's very short. It's about a paragraph. And it says, these guys, if they're examining a rifle or if they're test-firing a rifle, it's got to be video documented. If it's not video documented, it can't be used as evidence. All this funny business that goes on behind closed doors would go away overnight. It would cost literally maybe a dollar per case. This would be the cheapest investment our government ever made. But Mr. Sensenbrenner has made a point since last April not to even assign H.R. 1603 to even a subcommittee, so it can't be discussed in the House of Representatives.
Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner is chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Do you have an opinion as to why they are opposed to the videotaping?
Well, they've just told me they're opposed to it, and in my many discussions with ATF management, quite frankly, they don't want anything defined. And that would make it too easy to defend oneself. They have a lot of systems in place people don't realize that have no business being in America, first of all. Some of the things that they're up to, the Kremlin during the Cold War would have been downright proud and looks to be taken from the pages of a Gestapo manual, quite frankly.
Well, in fact, if I could interrupt you just for a moment. You know, there is a book, I'm sure you've read it by now, called Gun Control, Gateway to Tyranny, which JPFO publishes. And the book is a side-by-side comparison between the 1938 Nazi gun control laws and the 1968 United States federal gun control laws. I just think people, if they have a chance to look at that, they will be appalled at what the Republican Party and the Democratic Party is saying is okay in America. Because both parties support the 68 Gun Control Act without hesitation. If I can just give you one more example, we talk about they don't want anything to be defined, they being BATF. There's a term they've come up with called sporting purpose. And sporting purpose is lifted right out of the Nazi concept of gun control. The Nazis used the term not suitable for the hunting of fair game. And sporting purpose, as you know, and hopefully some of our listeners realize, has been defined to outlaw, to ban, to stop the importation of any type of military-style firearms that they determine is not suitable for sporting purpose. So I didn't mean to be so talkative, but go ahead.
No, you brought up a wonderful point, because guess what branch of the ATF determines whether something is of sporting purposes? Firearms technology branch. You can look in any law, you can look in the reference manual that is available publicly, you can look on their website. And the funny thing is, there's no definition for sporting purposes, just as there's no definition for readily restorable or readily convertible. That's a term that they use when they want to call a gun that, even though it doesn't fire full auto and is not a machine gun in any way, shape, form, or fashion, if they feel that you can restore it readily, they will charge you with the machine gun possession charge anyway, even if it doesn't fire as a machine gun.
That's an interesting word that you use, if they feel that you can restore it. It's an amazing way to run a government, depending on how somebody feels on any given day.
You're listening to Talking to America with our guest, Len Savage. Here once again is your host, Aaron Zellman.
Talking about Glover, is this an isolated incident?
No. It really opened my eyes because I looked at this from a very level-headed, calm, cool, and collected way and thought, surely this is just the exception and not the rule. Now, I've been involved in other court cases, both as a technical advisor and sometimes as an expert witness, and what I'm finding out is that this is the rule. It's not the exception. And there's many insidious ways that they get around this. To give you a way of background, firearms technology branch, whether it be a criminal submission, somebody says this is a machine gun and they send it off to these folks in West Virginia to examine, or whether I, as a manufacturer, have came up with a new and innovative design and send it off to them and say, please classify, because that's all they're supposed to do is classify firearms. Pigeonhole them. They can only go in about a half dozen slots. Now, you would think that a government laboratory that with things hanging in the balance so large, especially on the criminal end, that one, you would think that these folks would have some sort of engineering education or worked in the firearms industry. That's not the case. BATF will train you, OJT. The only requirement for being an expert is to be a BATF agent. All right. In case in point, their assistant chief is a high school dropout who entered the Marines, and after he was honorably discharged, that's basically how he came to work for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. He's second in command of this nation's foremost firearms laboratory. Now, there's another thing here. Not only are they not following a scientific method, which you would think would be expected in a so-called scientific laboratory, but they don't have any method. And this recently came to light when the Congressional Research Service released a memo last Friday that plainly states that there is no testing procedures manual, there is no written procedure other than some safety protocols. And those were only recently written. And one of the other insidious devices that if you find yourself on the receiving end of the BATF charging you, indicting you, your lawyer is going to file what's called a Freedom of Information Act request to try to get information on like devices and like classifications, you know, basically what have they done in the past. Now, who do you think is in control of this database?
Just, I'll take one guess. Your friends.
Firearms Technology Branch. All right? So they're the people who know that they've charged you, and they're the people who are in control whether or not you're going to have the information to defend yourself. Now, it goes one step further. In this Congressional Research Service memo to Congress, they document the fact that they have 300 cubic feet of classification letters. That's 1 foot deep, 3 feet high, and 100 feet long. And in all this time, nobody's ever thought to index them or catalog them. So physically, there's no way that you could get at the information to protect yourself. And the final arbiter of what information you'll get if you filed a Freedom of Information Act request is, of course, Firearms Technology Branch. So the deck is stacked against you. And it's no wonder that these federal courts have got a 95% conviction rate. There's no way to defend yourself against it. These folks control all the information. They don't have to follow a testing method. They can say, go figure out a way to make this machine gun. And since readily restorable is not defined in the law and not defined in the regulations, the ATF has two completely opposite standards that they run by. 15 minutes with basic hand tools, all right? The other one is 8 hours in a modern machine shop. And they'll hand it off to some guy in a machine shop, give him 8 full hours and say, make this a machine gun. Well, it's not a matter of if. I can take a kitchen sink in 8 hours and build you a machine gun. Modern machine shops with CNC capability, it's not even a question of if. It's a question of how many would you like, sir? So it's totally unrealistic on how they're applying these laws and twisting them. And this one little group of folks, the Firearms Technology Branch, control everything from definitions to what is readily restorable, what is of sporting purposes. And we got a distortion of that about 2 or 3 months ago, the so-called barrel ban of 2005. And this is a distortion of a law that was set up years ago to ban the importation of Saturday night specials, supposedly the gun of choice of criminals. And this is how legislation can be twisted later, because the people who enforce it can reinterpret it at will. And there is no checks and balances whatsoever installed in this.
The CRS report that Len is talking about is available to be downloaded at jpfo.org. And it's a real eye-opener. The Congress, the United States, is finally acknowledging that they've been giving money, your money, to a government agency that has been involved in activities that can be best described as highly questionable. Len, I'm just wondering, well, you know, the CRS report came out, but how many people in Congress really know or care from your perspective?
Very few. Very few understand it, and very few understand the issues, because they don't want to touch the Second Amendment issue. The Republican Party seems to be afraid of it, except for very few exceptions, and Congressman Gingrey of Georgia being one of those exceptions. Nobody would co-sponsor or co-sign H.R. 1603. Nobody. No other representative across this country thought that, gee, maybe we should be at least videotaping these guys and see what they're up to. If you are a criminal, it's going to slam the door on you. I mean, and this is going to make it very tough if you're a criminal. If there's documented video evidence that, you know, a gangbanger or somebody who's a violent criminal who really needs to go to prison, if it shows it on tape that, hey, you know, he illegally converted something, then the door's going to be slammed shut. So this is a good thing. And the better thing is if there's some funny business, it's going to show up on the tape. If it doesn't fire as a full auto, or if the guy says, well, I just feel this is readily restorable, but he can't readily restore it, then this nonsense case that's been pushed by the BATF anti-gun agenda, and that's what it is, very systematically, very methodically, very calmly, they're doing everything they can to eliminate gun ownership, and have. I can't help but think that we had the situation with Ruby Ridge. We had the situation with Waco. Everyone says, yeah, but they were kind of on the fringe. They were kind of wackos. So everyone kind of allowed them to get away with it. But now we have a report. And since this report's been out, only two senators have been interested to date. And we really, really are surprised that there just doesn't seem to be any interest right now in this Republican-controlled administration that somebody needs to rein this in. No other law enforcement entity in the United States can basically look at something, write a letter, and it's enforceable as law. And these folks are getting away with basically writing law as they go along.
You're listening to Talkin' to America with our guest, Len Savage. Here once again is your host, Aaron Zellman.
You've been telling people this information now for probably a year, and you came to JPFO for help. What has happened to you? I mean, in other words, what have they threatened you with? If they have, what have they done to you because you came to JPFO for help?
For starters, I was told that they were going to send a SWAT team to come take me out, which I assume means kill me, for. And I asked what for. I made a point of that, even though it scared me down to my socks. And they told me for irritating the ATF. I've been told I would be put in prison for 30 years. And it goes on and on. I've been threatened by field agents, I've been threatened by ATF management. I've appealed to the director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, Mr. Carl J. Trescott, in a letter last June. I sent it FedEx with a copy of JPFO's DVD. Now, I know he signed for it. I have the tracking information. I also know that 48 hours after he signed for it, Mr. Glover's attorney got a call and he got his guns back. So I assume he watched the DVD and was appalled. But Mr. Trescott hasn't saw fit to even acknowledge my letter, let alone investigate it. And I laid it out to him in specific terms. Look, this person on this date made this threat. This other person made this threat on this date. You know, I'm seeking your personal guarantee that the threats and the intimidation will stop. And instead of stopping, it's gotten worse. Right now, they've declared war on me, to say the least. They're performing what's called an economic Waco. Since the lifeblood of my business is research and development, they refuse to even communicate with me. I'm talking they won't communicate through written correspondence. They will not answer the phone. And even though I'm a licensed manufacturer and a special occupational taxpayer, an SOT is what it's called for short. An SOT holder means I'm allowed to build machine guns if I so choose. But they won't. They've seized my property. They haven't given it back. They won't give me any classification letters. They won't talk to me on the phone. And they won't answer any other correspondence that's been sent their way.
This is because you're working with JPFO, or you think this is just standard procedure?
Well, it has more to do with working with JPFO. Like I said, Mr. Spurgeon, who abruptly retired last month, the Enforcement Programs and Services Director, told me that basically the ATF didn't like those opinions being posted, and they saw it as a threat. And because of that, everything was going to slow down because they were going to have to run everything they gave me through their general counsel, Ms. Teresa Figueretta. And I've spoke with Ms. Figueretta once, and her parting words were rather chilling. Don't worry, Mr. Savage, we'll get to you. So it's pretty clear and it's pretty obvious what they want to do. They'd love to throw me in prison. But the problem is that I'm going out of my way not to violate the law. That I don't want to violate the law, and that's why I started asking the questions in the first place. So now, with this economic Waco, they're going to burn down my company financially.
What do you think gun owners can do to help prevent this type of situation happening again?
This is an easy answer. Download the report from JPFO that came from the Congressional Research Service. Send it directly to your senator. Senators are different animals and they have a lot more power. Demand that they look into this incident. demand that they call hearings. Let either the judiciary or let in front of the Appropriations Committee. You know what I would love to do? I would love to show the Senate's Appropriation Committee exactly how $1.2 million was spent, and that was in the prosecution of Mr. Glover. Just sit them down, let them watch the DVD. There wouldn't be any reason to even speak. Here's $1.2 million of the American taxpayers you entrusted to the BATF, and this is how they're spending it. And quite frankly, if we can't get their attention any other way, maybe it's time to cut off funding to the Department of Justice or cut off funding to the BATF. I'd like to see a layoff. To be honest, I'd much rather see what Mr. David Hardy suggested, and that's to go ahead and just take the regulation of this industry away from these folks and let the Department of Commerce handle it. They seem to be able to do it without the need for SWAT teams and harassment and threats, and it would be the way to go. But one step at a time.
One last question. Any speculation as to why the government of the United States, both Democratic and Republican, in previous administrations and the present one, it seemed to have no problem with a bunch of government criminals threatening you?
Well, we can look to the recent disaster to Katrina in New Orleans, and we can see government-endorsed disarmament of people. Don't let the peasants have any pitchforks. They're liable to storm the castle. I think that the American public scares the daylights out of our government right now.
That's interesting. The government's afraid of the people. Well, I think that's happened before. Well, Len, I want to thank you very much for being our guest today on Talking to America. Our subject has been about the arrogance and treachery of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. I've been your host, Aaron Zellman, and I want to remind all of you, if you won't defend your rights, don't complain when you lose them.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of JPFO.org or its members. Talking to America is a production of JPFO.org.